injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh.
John and I approach personal injury cases in the same way. We want to be certain that our clients are treated fairly, that our clients are comfortable, that our clients know they can trust us to get the best result for them.
It's our professional responsibility to make certain you are fairly and fully compensated. Most of our cases are settled without a trial.
Call injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh at 257-5661 for the personal attention you deserve.
Welcome to another podcast, SlidesOffice.com, brought to you by our friends at Madison Computer Works. Joining us now, the owner of Madison Computer Works since 1982, it's Brian Lease. Brian, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you.
So, I tell you, it's a lot of changes constantly. I don't think there are many people in business that see more changes than you do.
Well, since 1 year is like 10 years in the car industry, each year is like 10 years. Let's see, I've been at it at least 32, 33 years. Yeah, I'm about 330 years of changes.
You're like Methuselah.
Exactly. I'm the old man of the industry at this point.
Tell me about the cloud. Some people don't even know what the cloud is, but now there's a new cloud act in front of the Supreme Court. Explain that.
Okay. So the cloud is just a term that kind of is used for anything that connects through the Internet. So when people say the cloud, they're really, in essence, talking about the Internet or the connectivity of all these different computers, both, you know, at homes and big corporations, at colleges and everything. The new Cloud Act is something that corporations like Microsoft and other companies and individuals want Congress to put through, because it would deal with how you handle data that's stored in other countries. When stuff is in another country, there's sovereignty issues. If the government asks for information and that information is stored, let's say, in Ireland or somewhere, now for you to actually give it to the government, you're taking data that isn't even housed in this country. It's housed somewhere else completely. But because you have access to it as a company like Microsoft, there's no legal precedent. These digital data and information, the laws have not been updated. As a matter of fact, there's nothing since 1980 even dealing with anything even close to this. So there is no law. There's no procedure. There's no set way of doing it. Well, it happened that the government actually asked Microsoft to give them data on a server in a foreign country, and Microsoft said, no, we can't do this and everything. We won't do it. The appellate court actually upheld what Microsoft, who was fighting for the rights of the data in that other country, and said, no, the appellate court said, so it's gone to the Supreme Court. Well, Microsoft and other, huge manufacturers, whether it be Amazon or Google or whoever, they want Congress, they want Congress to pass a law or a bill. And so they created, the Cloud Act, which they want Congress to modify and to set rules and laws, not the Supreme Court to come down and say, yeah, we agree with the government, and suddenly every bit of data that's out there that's not housed in America is subject to the government just saying, we want it for whatever reason, without having any paperwork or required warrants or anything else.
What does this mean for just little old SlidesOffice.com or anybody?
Well, or let's say you were an Amazon or, a Google, and you wanted to have your servers, storing data for people from overseas servers that aren't in this country. This is a global world now, so they don't want to lose all that business. I mean, if you lived in Germany and you had to worry that the U.S. government could just demand your data that's being stored, not even in America, but just it's an American company that has control of it, again, you might not decide not to do business with these big corporations. So actually it means a lot as far as dollars and cents, but it also means that there should be a laws in place and a set procedure so it's not abused, that some law enforcement can't just say, I want information on so-and-so in this country and demand it and get it.
Of course, we had the battle over the iPhones and Apple, right?
Exactly.
So give me your feelings about net neutrality and what's happened since the Trump administration changed net neutrality.
Well, I think that, and in checking around, even here, both in our store and with other people, that people just don't understand what net neutrality is. Seems like it's almost too complex for people to be able to get what it, you know, how it works, what it is, that sort of stuff.
Well, if you listen to Tom Hartman explain it, and you listen to Rush Limbaugh explain it, you're going to be very confused, right?
Exactly. And because, you know, the different sides have politicized what net neutrality is for their own, you know, agendas on, people think, oh, it's just a partisan issue. Well, I'm sorry. It's not just a partisan issue. It's a actual thing. And it can be misused and spun one way or the other. But the bottom line is, if you get rid of net neutrality, which is a protection for the individual to not get, you know, data that they look at censored or charged more for it and everything, if you look at how it works and what it is and what the effects of taking it away are, forgetting politics on the left or the right, you realize that, my gosh, this is here to protect me, to protect me from being charged too much money because maybe I listen to this type of music or I watch this type of video from here. I mean, it's almost like prejudice in a way. You know, your ISP can say, oh, well, you stream music. We don't like this country and Western music stuff and everything or whatever, so we're going to charge you more money for that streaming down. In other words, they would have the power to determine what content being streamed to you they charge more money for arbitrarily. They don't have to have a reason to charge, you know, more or whatever. They just, they can say, well, this type of stuff is going to cost you more money. So people have a difficult, they don't understand that. There was a beautiful YouTube video that used the Whopper, believe it or not. And if you go to YouTube and just do a search on Burger King net neutrality, Burger King actually did a little spoofs thing on if net neutrality were applied to, like, the Whopper, what it would mean to the end user. And it's hilarious. I mean, and they actually did this to people, you know, and everything. So I do urge people to go to YouTube and just look up Burger King net neutrality, four words, and watch it. Have you seen that?
I have not.
Oh, it's great. It's hilarious. But it actually gets the point across so that people can understand it in a common day thing, which is why I liked it.
You know, there's so many things you don't learn on a daily basis. For instance, when AT&T at the end of the year into the beginning of the new year had its huge outage in the upper Midwest, I learned the hard way that it's very hard to get your money back for the days that it was down, and mine was down for almost a week, and they wanted to give me like $17.
Right.
Right. But then we also learned, and Professor Emeritus Barry Orton says, in fact, as far as how many people were actually affected, because of deregulation, AT&T doesn't have to tell us how many people were down.
Right, right. And you know, the whole thing is, well, first of all, think about it. If there were 1 million or 2 million people and they all demanded $17 back, well, $17 million, I mean, then you look at it as, oh, it's only $17 for all my pain and suffering. But, you know, the bottom line is that if you've got your email being done by a big corporation who's protected by the laws and everything, because the laws are passed to support them and protect them, not to protect you, the little guy, you know, I mean, what are you going to do about it? What recourse do you have? You really don't. I mean, what are you going to do, a class action suit and get enough people? Hey, people still need to get their email. They don't want to upset the apple cart or the person who's got their email control in their hand. It's like a drug. It's like if you're with Google on a free Google, Gmail account, and suddenly all your emails are gone or somebody steals your account or whatever. What recourse? Have you ever tried to get through to an actual human there and talk to someone?
It's probably not easy.
you'd be lucky. So, I always urge people to export their emails and their contact lists. So if they ever lost control of their email, that they aren't left high and dry, that they could rebuild, maybe take out another email account, maybe even pay for one. Heaven forbid you pay $50 a year, but now you've got somebody who cares whether it's actually working or not, or if you're having a problem with it. But the point is that people don't do that. They go for these free accounts, and you get what you pay for.
Tell me about what's up with Spectre and Meltdown flaw in computers and patches.
Yeah, so that was all that big news that was on, all the news stations and everything about how they discovered these flaws in the hardware, you know, Intel chips and AMD chips and everything, that could be exploited, and have been there for years and years, but, you know, can be exploited by those nefarious people who have hackers and stuff with the proper code to gain access to your, you know, computers or websites or things, you know, to information, we'll say. And suddenly it was made apparent that these flaws were there, and so now they've been rushing out, they being the manufacturers of the motherboards and processors and Microsoft itself, to try and find, it's not just Microsoft, I mean Apple, everybody, the hardware is where the issue is, but they're trying to make a software patch to plug the hole in the dam. Because with the exploit's actually out there now, and there's starting to actually be malware that takes advantage of these holes or these exploits that can get through, but it's in its infancy. Well, the patches themselves that Microsoft rushed out with, or Intel, or these different manufacturers rushed out with, those had problems and actually caused problems. So in an attempt to, you know, to try and patch the holes, it actually created a certain amount of either data corruption or problems for people. So Microsoft pulled back and said, well, wait a second, until we can make sure that this isn't going to host up people's information or systems, or until these manufacturers actually get working patches, we're pulling back. So they've pulled back most of these patches for the Spectre and Meltdown. So what do you do? Do you patch it and hope that the patch that you put on your, you know, to patch that hole in your hardware / software doesn't cause you a problem? Or do you wait for Microsoft to come out with a patch that actually does work for your particular motherboard and then pushes it in their updates? Most people have taken the, I'll wait for Microsoft to approve it and push it as a necessary patch. That's the tact that most people have taken on dealing with these Spectre and Meltdown flaws in computers.
Is this something you keep your customers up to date on? In other words, you know, you can never let your guard down. Everybody's got to have their computer serviced at some level. What do you do to keep your customers up to date on this stuff?
Well, we do the best that we can, and the problem is it changes so quickly as to where it's at. You know, first everyone say, oh, go out and patch it right away, and then a bunch of people patched it and they had problems. And we therefore try and keep our pulse on it. We read different, you know, lots of different sources on what's happening with it, and then when somebody asks, like you just asked, we give the information. Now, is it highly complex? The thing that people in the end want to hear is, yeah, I'll wait for Microsoft. I should wait for Microsoft, or no, I should patch it. Well, I can't tell you how long it's going to be till Microsoft has a good patch for your particular motherboard with its particular flaw. I can only tell you that that's what the majority of people are doing. But in answer to your question, you're right. It's highly complex. Whether I'm talking about that, you know, that Cloud Act in the Congress that I explained earlier, or whether I'm talking about Meltdown and Spectre, that's why people need a company like ours to help make sense of it.
All right. We'll be back with Brian Leese, Madison Computer Works, 231-8000. They're on Madison's west side, right over by CUNA off Mineral Point Road on Island Drive. Again, Brian Leese, Madison Computer Works at SlysOffice.com.
Jeff's Guitar Clinic is a multifaceted shop offering guitars, amplifiers, and all accessories, guitar lessons for all ages, and instrument repair of the highest quality. Take the scenic drive to beautiful Fort Atkinson and see what total customer satisfaction is all about. Call Jeff's Guitar Clinic today at 920-723-1733. That's Jeff's Guitar Clinic at 920-723-1733. Jeffsguitar.com.
We're back at SliceOffice.com, brought to you by Madison Computer Works and other great local sponsors. Brian Leese from Madison Computer Works, talking about a variety of issues. All right, well, this is, once again, phishing scams, still a problem?
Phishing scams are what we see the most of coming into our service department, and nowadays it's they're really tricky. They can come in as a pop-up in an email or on a website. You're just surfing along, and suddenly something pops up and says, ooh, you know, something's happened, you're at risk, this is my... And they pretend to be. Phishing pretends to be somebody that they're not, so that you'll let your guard down and give them information or access. So it can be an email saying, hey, this is Google, we've noticed a problem with your Google or your Office 365 account, please log in here and correct this stuff. Well, the second you put in your username and password, they just gained access to your Office 365 or your Google account, or it might be, you know, say Citibank or whatever. So they try and trick you, and a lot of times they have actual logos and they look official, like it's from Microsoft or Google or such.
That's not very nice.
Well, they're not embedding malware on your system per se. They're not until you give them access to your computer. So phishing scams come in all shapes and forms of types. You know, it can be, you know, we've noticed your machine is infected. Go to this site, click here, and have, you know, one of our technicians help you get it cleaned up, and then people fall for it. I mean, it's a numbers game. If X percent fall for it, they just got that percentage of people to give them access who... And now once they have access, they can embed stuff in the background, or they can steal your Google email or Microsoft, you know, email, and now they're sitting there sending out emails to everyone that looks like it's coming from you. And so if you do get something like that, never be skeptical. Never believe that it's true. If someone says, oh, if something comes in saying, oh, there's been weird activity on your account, go here, do this, you know, take a step back, close that browser or whatever, and if you're really worried about it, actually open up and go to the site yourself or contact somebody, not from any numbers or anything that was on that thing that popped up on your screen, but maybe from your bill. Maybe you're going to call up Charter, you know, Spectrum, I should say, or, you know, call up somebody at Microsoft or whatever. But don't believe it just because it came in and is on your screen. Matter of fact, if it does do that, don't believe it.
Don't believe it. All right. Touchscreen tablet, phablet, or laptop? How do you determine what's best for you?
Well, so a lot of people like, you know, like an iPad, like the small, ultralight, small screen. And most of the time in situations like that, it's because you're consuming information from the Internet. If all you're doing is surfing the Internet and looking at email, in other words, consuming information that's on there, and you're not doing high creativity, like you don't have to, you know, sit there and try and type a nice huge letter or create a visual, you know, piece of brochure or whatever, then you can get away with the smaller, you know, tablets or phablets, which is a cross between a phone and a tablet. It's, you know, but if you're doing multitasking where you have multiple windows open and you're working on four things simultaneously or maybe two things simultaneously and actually in creative mode, not just consumption mode, then you need a laptop and maybe even an extra screen or a desktop computer. So figuring out what's right is based upon what your need for that technology is. Maybe you are consuming information from the Internet, but you also need to be creating stuff or multitasking. You shouldn't be looking at trying to make an iPad or a phablet do those sort of things. You then need a laptop or a desktop. And we help people all the time by isolating what it is they want to use it for so that we can help them pick the right, you know, area or the where they should be sitting, where they should be looking on hardware so they can do everything they need to do, not just the consumption of information off the Internet.
What if you need to print?
Well, you can have issues with printers if they're not ear print compatible. So a lot of people, they have a printer or buy a printer, and then they find they can't get their you know, their tablet or their phone to print out properly. So if you do need to print, then, you know, obviously you're going to have to get a print that is supported by that device and everything, and that's not all printers.
And, of course, some of us just get used to a laptop. That's what we're sticking with.
But they're heavier, and they're, you know, but they're...
That doesn't bother me. You know, and then, you know, I don't know why. I feel a little more secure with a laptop. I don't know why, but I do. One thing that you didn't have on your list, but we should probably remind people, because I am so inept with my computer skills, what is it that I pay for once a year with Madison Computer Works that's been a lifesaver for me?
Oh, the remote support. So
yeah.
We've introduced a lot of plans for home users, especially people who have like things like Windows 10 where updates happen automatically and it changes all the furniture on your desktop and everything. So basically, you know, things will pop up or you're not sure how to answer stuff or things come up on your screen. Well, you don't want to have to rush over to our store to get the help or have us try and help you using your eyes to try and describe what you're seeing or pay for a trip charge necessarily. So the remote support, we upgrade our anti-malware product, the WebRoot, to computer care plans that enable us to just remote in and see your screen like we're sitting in front of it. So you've got something popped up on your screen, and I can just look at it and say, oh, that's caused because you've got Classic Shell. Here, let me do this update, boom, 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 and it's working. People really need that kind of support these days, especially if they have Windows 10. But even if they don't have Windows 10, when you need help and somebody who can, you know, see your screen and do it. So we use that for you anytime you've got an issue. We just pop onto it and do the remote support because you have one of the and they're inexpensive. These plans aren't a fortune, and it's like $95 more than having just the WebRoot alone anti-malware.
Speaking of anti-malware, what's the best to use?
Well, now, anti-malware products to combat malware, of course, have evolved over time. So a lot of people got used to over the years McAfee and Norton and Spectrum's anti-malware or AVG or Avast. They're not created equal, meaning that if you're using technology that relies, that used to work, but relies on definitions to recognize malware, you know, so it downloads and uses your processor and RAM to try and recognize it at your machine level, then you're only protecting against a small percentage of the millions of pieces of malware that are on the Internet. Cloud-based products like WebRoot, they route all your Internet traffic through giant servers, you know, that scan and look at the nature, the heuristics and such of the data that's coming through. And if it sees anything that's either malware or is suspicious because it's not, you know, it's not behaving like normal data does, it will mark it and keep a track of it and even block it if it determines that, hey, there's no definitions for it, but it's behaving like a virus is. You know, it's behavioral. So having cloud-based protection these days is the only way to truly protect against malware. And if you compare cloud-based protection, you really can't because it does it completely different than definition-based. But the efficacy goes through the roof. And the speed of your computer goes through the roof because now you're not trying to use your processor and RAM to protect at machine level. Now it's all being done by huge computers hooked up off the Internet before it ever gets to your machine.
Seems like you've had some experience with this.
Boy, we deal with it a lot. The Internet really got horribly infected, and we found that we had to become experts on the different technologies out there, both to protect our customers and to clean up stuff that for people who weren't protecting their machines properly. So we get tons of machines in here where people say, well, I've used McAfee for a year or Kaspersky. Oh, Kaspersky is a whole other story. But anyway, you know, or AVG or Avast, and they come in here and they say, I scanned, I didn't find it. Well, of course you didn't. If you're scanning with definitions that didn't find it coming down, why do you think that scanning afterwards would find it? It doesn't recognize it and everything, so it let it into your machine. So if your machine's acting slow and having weird stuff happen, and you say, well, I scanned it with my such and such, well, that's kind of a silly statement, not that I would say that to you, but it doesn't do any good to scan it after you're already infected because it didn't find it and protect you from it coming in. Why would it find it after the fact?
Give me an update on Windows 10.
Okay, so Windows 10 came out with a creators update in the spring, and then they came out with one in the fall. And what happened is Microsoft has started to really include like drivers for hardware in with their updates. Normally drivers are done by the manufacturer of your hardware, but if Microsoft includes it with it and that driver doesn't work well, well, suddenly you have problems like an update goes through and your hardware doesn't work properly. It could be a chipset on the motherboard, meaning the machine won't even launch into Windows properly, or it won't display properly on your screen, or your networking card doesn't work properly, and people get really frustrated. Well, the bottom line is a lot of people upgraded their old computers, their Windows 7 or Windows 8 computers, to Windows 10, and they really shouldn't have. In other words, their machines were sold, the hardware that was in there, the motherboard, the chipsets, the driver, you know, the videos, the network cards, really don't support Windows 10 properly, and never are going to. There were no drivers. The hardware was made before Windows 10 existed. So what I'm trying to say is that if somebody has Windows 10 and they upgraded on an old machine, suddenly these Windows update comes through and their hardware doesn't work properly. You might go to HP and it says not supported properly by Windows 10. Why? Because your machine's 5 years old. Most of those people, I let them know, you can't turn Windows 10 updates off. Like you could in Windows 7, you could say don't run the updates. So you're going to have problems. Even if I fix your problem, you're going to continue having problems every time updates come through that mess up, because your hardware really was never meant to be supported by Windows 10 or upgraded to Windows 10. People say to me, well, why did Microsoft force it on me, or why did they let me update it? Well, they'll always let you update it and everything, but they're not saying that your hardware is going to work forever with Windows 10, only that at that point in time, you could upgrade it to Windows 10, and it worked. I mean, you got a year out of it since you did the free update to 10. If you buy a new computer, great. Windows 10 works wonderfully on it. The manufacturer makes drivers for the hardware. It's a beautiful world. But if it's an older machine that you upgraded to Windows 10, you very well may have problems. And then we have to sort through, you know, is it worth fixing? Is there a fix for it, number one? Or number two, should we be looking at getting you onto a new computer and copying your data over, reinstalling your programs, and setting you back up, help you do the migration to a machine that is going to support the operating system properly?
And a new computer is not that expensive.
Well, that's the thing. The computers have dropped in price. I mean, I got laptops starting at $529 with 15-inch displays, 15.6-inch displays, full keyboards, DVD-RW, non-glare screens. I guess what I'm saying is that $529 for a laptop with like a 7-hour battery life or whatever it is these days, you know, on the battery, it's not expensive. Labor, generally about an hour of labor to do a transfer, data transfer.
All right. If you have any questions or want to stop by, how do people get a hold of Madison Computer Works?
The easiest way is to call 608-231-8000, or you can stop by our store at 353 Island Drive. I used to say behind Brugger's, but of course Brugger's closed in the corner there. So now I have to say across from Oakwood Village on Mineral Point Road.
All right. Brian Lees from Madison Computer Works, thanks for coming on.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you, Sly.
Listening to SlysOffice.com.
SlysOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.
Making stuff matters, because when we make things in America, America makes it. American workers and families make it. Our communities make it. Consider this. For every one manufacturing job in our communities, 5 more jobs are supported. Manufacturing jobs pay an average of 10 to 50% more than service sector jobs. That allows working families to support their local businesses, schools, emergency services, and more. Creating 2.5 million new manufacturing jobs would mean at least $100 billion for our economy over the next decade. Domestic manufacturing is the green economy. It's among the cleanest, most efficient, and productive in the world. That's why the United Steelworkers and our more than 1 million members and retirees are fighting so hard to protect and grow manufacturing. Because making stuff really does matter. Join our fight. Visit usw.org and like us at facebook.com/steelworkers. Support American manufacturing. Buy American. Buy Union.